A new study shows that you probably think you're ready to retire, and your advisor probably thinks you are not ready to retire.
This is Retirement Revealed, where Jeremy Kyle and his guests guide you towards making smarter retirement, investment, and tax planning decisions.
Welcome to Retirement Revealed. I'm your host, Jeremy Kyle, and we're here to turn your retirement savings into retirement income. Today, we're talking with Nate Miles about the 2023 All Spring Global Investments Retirement Survey and what that means for you. Nate, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you, your interest.
You got it. Well, we're all things retirement. So when I see a retirement survey, we're definitely interested. But tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then we can talk about the survey and what it means for our listeners.
Yeah, so I work at Allspring Global Investments down here based out of Charlotte. We have offices all around the country and overseas, including in your area, Jeremy, Milwaukee. We manage, typical long-only fundamental and systematic equities and fixed income, along with money market funds at Allspring. I've been with the firm now for 7 years, but have been in the industry for 25 years at this point, and have really loved financial markets really since I was in high school, was enamored really during the dot-com bubble days and pursued a career. In this line of work, I got into the retirement, quote unquote, business back in 2010. And it's one of those things, as you probably find, Jeremy, that the more you know, the more you realize you don't know as you kind of work your way through this side of the industry. So love the job, love working at Allspring, and love thinking about retirement for certainly Americans, but also, my colleagues here at Allspring.
Yeah, that's the retirement survey. You've been doing that for a little while now. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is our 21st annual version of the study here at Allspring and our predecessor firm. It was initially kind of geared more towards the employer-sponsored side, so dealing more with participants. And over the last 5 or 6 years, we really started to delve into, the kind of near retirees and retirees, and focus more on that advisor angle as well. So we've brought that into the mix, just giving the changing retirement landscape that we're finding our clients and their end clients are really interested in these days.
Yeah, I was reading through it. I like to read retirement research, so I was enjoying reading through it. So I did find that interesting that a lot of surveys will just ask investors, what do you think about this or that? But then you were asking advisors, how are investors doing to be prepared? But tell us a little bit more about kind of what you're looking at this year and how we can use the survey results. How can we use that to help us make better retirement decisions?
Yeah, so great question. So maybe just quickly, so the survey was focused on really two cohorts, both near retirees, those are people with more than $200,000 in investable assets and who are still working but are 55 and older, and then our retirees. So same asset threshold for them, but they're no longer working. So not really the average American per se, but we think really reflective of an American that's participated in the quote-unquote retirement system for the majority of their career. Our focus was really, from an advisor perspective, we wanted to delve into were what was the perception of knowledge for an individual, but also for an advisor of their clients or their individuals. What changes did an individual identify, whether the retirees or near retirees, and what changes did, let's say, an advisor make on behalf of the majority of their clients? And a few things really stood out to us in this year's study. I've joked a little bit as I've talked to people about the survey that in some ways the retirees and near retirees are kind of like if you ask 100 people if they're better than average drivers, 80 of them are going to say yes, and we know that's not statistically possible. And the same thing shows up in our survey, right? Near retirees and retirees tend to be a lot more confident in their abilities than the advisors that they often work with. And one thing that stood out to me in this year's study as we interviewed or surveyed, I should say, advisors for the first time, was when we were asking retirees that actually leveraged on a regular basis financial advice from a financial advisor or a financial planner of some sort, they were less confident in their own ability to make decisions, but more confident in the decisions that were made. And that kind of gets back to that question of the more you know, the more you realize you don't know, but the better you feel about getting that kind of high quality advice to help you make the right decisions for you and your family.
That's interesting the way you said that. And I'm taking down these notes because I'm always trying to learn. But you said that retirees using advisors were less confident in their own personal ability, but more confident in the actual decisions that were made. That's interesting.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading through it, and tell me, maybe I'm perceiving this wrong, but the line in the survey I said saw was, advisors believe investors know less than investors think they do. About Social Security, Medicare, and financial planning. Now, it was interesting to me. I was reading that thinking, like, this actually says a lot about these advisors. Like, shouldn't these advisors be taking an educational approach? Like, these advisors should be empowering their clients. They should help them to know more about their finances. Am I misinterpreting this, or what's your thought kind of hearing that?
So that jumped out to me as well as we were going through the few hundred pages of survey results that we got. And I think that what I found most interesting along those lines was that advisors, when they were helping their clients, were focused on, they thought they could move the dial most by helping people with things like diversification and asset allocation and how to make people's assets last. But when you ask the clients themselves, they said they need help on budgeting and financial planning, on Medicare, on long-term care planning, very different things. And certainly asset allocation, diversification, incredibly important, and you're going to get there. But the clients themselves are saying, hey, I need to make sure I'm spending an appropriate amount on a regular basis, and I need help there. And the advisor's kind of looking past that, saying, no, there's more sophisticated things that I want to work on. And the client's like, look, I'm not there yet. I need some basic things. I just went from being a W-2 employee getting paid every 2 weeks to now I need to create my own income, and I don't even know what I'm spending. And so there was a little disconnect, not only in terms of the confidence level, but also of where clients and advisors wanted to focus or how they thought they'd move the dial the most.
Yeah, it is interesting. That's one reason why I focus solely on retirement planning, and my team only does retirement planning. We've got a retirement process. Like, this is a big deal. You do it one time, most likely. And I think you got to do it in a certain process where you should control the things you can control first before you start looking at the things that you can't control. And I believe strongly the investments you really can't control. And so what you're telling me is perhaps I've got things in the right order, which I like to hear. In that step one, we're looking at what it is that you spend in retirement and maybe need to spend in retirement. Step two is what you make in retirement. Like, how do you max out your Social Security and pensions? Step three is how do you control what your tax planning situations are? And step four is the investments. And a lot of times, actually, it's interesting, a lot of maybe other advisors have trained clients to think this, because a lot of times when people come in, they're kind of bringing their investment statements and say, like, hey, what do you think I should do? And then we say, can we just set those aside and see what other questions you have? And they instantly have all these questions about how much can I live on and what should I do with long-term care and Medicare and Social Security on there. And so you're reinforcing this, maybe as a behavioral finance bias in mind, but you're reinforcing that this order of kind of how you approach things is really what the clients want. And I think it's probably more impactful to focus on those non-investment decisions. And then, yes, get to the investment decisions, but to kind of like place things in a proper order.
Yep, I think that's 100% right. We found in our study, too, just the differences between near retirees and retirees. So near retirees are focused on the stability of their assets. So, yesterday, the markets closed, I had $500,000. Today, or maybe next week, I have $505,000. Well, the week after, I've got $495,000. They're really glued to their asset balance. Once they flip to retirement, they focus on what their income can, or what their balance can provide for them and their family, both today and in the future. And so they almost instantly flip from the balance to the income number.
Yeah.
And I think it's not easy for people to do that on their own, but that's that mental shift that people are making as they kind of progress through that discussion. I think that's why they need help on those, more behavioral aspects of it, in terms of, budgeting or optimal Social Security claiming strategies, or again, long-term care, which came up a couple times in the qualitative part of our study.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. We had, I like how you did have that designation of retirees and near retirees. We just had on Fritz Gilbert talking about, he's part of the Retirement Manifesto. He wrote a book, Keys to a Successful retirement. And he was saying that a lot of times before you're retired, you're focused on the investment side. And then after you're retired, you're focused on everything besides the investments. It's like, what do I do with my life? And how do I fill up my time? And what's the fun part of things? And you kind of realized that the numbers are there and you're going to do well with it either way. Let's just kind of think about the life and not so much the money. Although it's maybe it's just easy to think about the money, maybe, especially as you're planning towards that that retirement.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we found in our study, and you know, that retirees in general, and this has been true in the 7 years that I've been working on the study here at Allspring, that they're happier than near retirees. And some of that, I think, is the fear of the unknown in some ways. I don't know what it's going to be like when I finally cross mm-hmm. that threshold into retirement. One of the questions we asked that I thought was fascinating was, how much time do you think about spending? How much time do you think about income and financial matters? And we looked across your retirees and retirees, and whether it was, you know, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually, retirees were always significantly less in the weekly, monthly, quarterly numbers, but significantly higher on the annual side. So mm-hmm. part of the reason I think they're happy is they're just not as focused on it as they were pre-retirement, when it was this kind of big unknown of what's it going to be like when I finally stop earning a paycheck and have to create my own income. They get there and like, oh yeah, I've got all these other things that I get to worry about. And it's not so much about how did my balance do today or this week.
Well, that's good news. So you're telling me that the retirees are focusing on money as a tool, not the not the end goal, which is a helpful thing. And in the survey, it said 69% of retirees said retirement is better than expected, which is a pretty similar number, I think, that Fritz mentioned when we were talking to him. So that's good news that retirement is better than expected. And I think you hit the nail on the head. My thought is it's a bit of the anticipation anxiety, right? That maybe you mentioned of the fear of the unknown. Well, you hit retirement, you know it, and you're doing all right. That's a good thing. Another part might just be how resilient you are, like planning for it. A lot of times you're thinking, oh my goodness, if I don't hit this number, how can I possibly live? And you know, I've seen time after time where you might be in a high paying job and then you retire and your income drops significantly and you're just as happy. And guess what you spend? When you had the high paying job, you spent what was in your checkbook. It just happened to be more. And then when you have a lower income and you're retired, you spent what's in your checkbook. It just happened to be left. Thus, you kind of make do with what's there, which is good news. Good news about America and humanity, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, because we've seen that in our studies as well, that despite what we think of savers, they tend and their lack of financial literacy, they tend to hit retirement and somehow they find a way to balance their budget. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, well, of course they do. They don't have a choice. Right? There is no income coming in to offset anything. And so they say, okay, I'm making $1,000, I can spend $1,000. You know, it doesn't need to be any more difficult than that. And I'll make choices to do that. Our study this year, and you might have seen it, Jeremy, was something new for us. We identified the average decline in income that a retiree could sustain before it significantly impacted their happiness, 25%.
Okay.
It was a much larger number than I thought. And we had another question, unrelated, but I think corroborates that 25% decline in spending before happiness is impacted or satisfaction is impacted in a significant way. And it was that if you tally up needs, wants, and wishes on a monthly basis, it's only about 64% of our survey respondents' income. So that idea that they could lose 25% and still be pretty happy actually works pretty well with the data point that their needs, wants, and wishes are only covering about 64% of their income. Now, we can debate, are they really getting everything into that 64%? But it does allow you to better, I think it allows us to understand the psyche of the individual saying, look, I can cut some of that stuff out and still not have it impact me in a really significant way, which we thought, again, was a pretty good outcome this year.
Yeah, so your spending in retirement could drop by 25% before your happiness is impacted. It just sounds like these retirees got things figured out, because if you ask your standard American, how much money do you need to make you happy? The answer is almost universally 25% more. So here you are spending however many years thinking I need a little bit more to be happy. And then you get to where things are maybe more fixed and you don't even have the chance anymore to get to the higher amount. And you're thinking, well, I could actually spend 25% less and still be happy. Like that's some good contentment. I like that. I was talking to someone And just it popped into one of us said it. I forget which one started, but just the idea that if you want less, you have more. And I think that's happening here for these retirees, is that they just realize money wise the wants aren't going to satisfy what they need, and then they realize, well, I have enough. I've got more than I need. So that's all very good news. Some positivity about the future of retirement.
Yeah, it's funny, even going a step further on that front. So we had about 17 categories that we asked new retirees and retirees about. Some were, you know, financial, you know, are you happy with your income level, your savings balance, your mortgage debt, your credit card debt? Others were, are you happy with your social life, your family life, all these things? And retirees were happier in every case except for two. So 15 of the 17. One, they were tied, and that was that was their view of current health. Retirees and near retirees were tied on that front. The one where retirees were less happy than near retirees was their view of future health.
Okay.
Their retirees were less happy or less satisfied. And that makes sense, right? The average retiree in our study was 70. The average near retiree was 61. And so you'd expect that a 70-year-old is probably not as bullish on their health as a 61-year-old just by virtue. So other than that, it runs across both the financial and non-financial aspects of retirement, where we see that happiness kind of come through over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, another thing I saw is you mentioned a lot of people unretired by choice. And I that especially stuck out to me because I've heard this unretirement term a lot lately, where we had someone on the show and he just says, I'm unretired. So he went from working to unretirement. I've got someone I'm talking to in a few days. So look out for that podcast coming out here where he says he's unretired as well too. So it seems like all of a sudden the term of choice lately is unretirement, not even working, retiring, unretiring, just going straight to unretirement. Like I'm not calling this retirement anymore. And of course you said in the survey you found that 83% unretired by choice. So what is it that are getting the retired folks to, you know, go back to work in some capacity, and tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing there is you're 100% right. So 1 in 8 people in our study are unretired. So they were at one point retired and they've gone back to work. The interesting thing for us is, as you mentioned, 83% of the time they went back to work by their own choice. More than half the time, 57% of the time, they're doing so on a part-time basis. They're not going back full-time, it's part-time. But what was interesting when you dig into the data a little bit, because we saw this last year and we wanted to kind of follow up on it this year, was when you dig into the data, what you see is that those unretired individuals have less current income, have less future expected income, and have a lower savings or retirement balance. So while they're going back by choice, they're actually probably closer to that line of do I have enough or not than the rest of the retired population. Very interestingly, from my perspective at least, was that that group also tended to be more advised than the average retiree by about 14 percentage points more. So part of me believes that they're going back to work because they've had some, you know, professional advice help them identify that maybe they're more at risk for not having that retirement that they need and that they could run out later on in life. Right. One thing's for certain, if you don't want to work past age 65, but you have to work 66, 67, it's definitely better than going back to work at 76 or 77. Right? I think that's probably a fair statement. And so we're seeing people do that. We've done a bunch of work, Jeremy, on the value of working in retirement for people that do go back to work. And it's significant. If you think of something like a shortfall risk or the risk of running out of money in retirement, even working and replacing 25% of your income for a couple of years can reduce that risk by about 50%, right? As you let your balance compound a little bit longer, you're continuing to contribute to it, or at least not drawing it down over time. And so that's generally quite powerful. And so we're seeing more and more people do that.
Yeah, it's interesting too that showing just even a couple of years of working can really help out the rest of your retirement. I don't know what it is about age 60. I'm not there yet. So maybe there's some magical thing going on. It seems like at age 60, you really, really want to retire. Like maybe it's just, I don't know. It's a round number. So it sounds like I want to retire at 60 and it's below 65. So it's like you won, I think.
Yeah.
But you look at 60 versus 62, like those 2 years are just so expensive compared to you retire at 60. Like you cannot get Social Security. Whether it's a good idea to go at 62 or not, but you just can't get Social Security and you're definitely not on Medicare. Like those 2 years from 60 to 62 seem to be so expensive. And working those 2 extra years seems to just kick up, like you said, those probabilities of success or your total income in retirement a huge amount.
So a couple of things on that front. So the average age of our retirees was 62. Mm-hmm. The most common age was 65. Then it was 62. Then it was 60. So you're right. We did see a spike at age 60. People that retired in their early 60s were more likely to suggest they wish they worked a little bit longer than any other cohort. So I think you're onto something there, that something happens where people want to retire at 60. They do it and they realize, oh boy, I need to really, you know, I can't touch Social Security yet, and or I touched it too early, would have really benefited from sticking it out a little bit longer. So 100% right on that front. And there is some regret to not working a little bit longer for those early people in their early 60s that do decide to retire.
Yeah, interesting. You also saw, reading through it, that 37% of people said they retired sooner than expected. And you mentioned that 62 was kind of the average. It seems to me, if you ask a 55-year-old, when are you going to retire? They will tell you 65. But if you ask a 65-year-old, when did you retire? They will tell you 62. So that's my common advice is, what, you know, you're 55, you're 60, whatever age you think you're going to retire, just make sure you're ready 3 years ahead of time, like in your planning and your investments, just be ready 3 years ahead of time, because it seems like that's roughly what's going to happen.
Yeah, great point. So age 55 was the fourth most common age. So you've pretty much hit on all of them, 65, 62, 60, and 55 at this point. What I would say on that front is, and we found every year that I've done the survey, we find something similar. And I think this is one of those alarming stats, right? One that I think helps people question some of the assumptions that are made. But 35% this year, 40% last year, of people retired sooner than they expected for reasons beyond their control. So job cuts, health reasons, or a health issue with a loved one, family member, or friend that they need to take care of. And that has a really significant impact, as you know, as well as I do, on ultimately your retirement readiness and your ability to sustain your lifestyle, right? Is that you're shortening your savings period. You're not allowing the assets to compound for quite as long, and all else equal, the kind of turn, the drawdown period is going to be the same. And so it really does impact, have a very meaningful impact. And I think you're right to say that people should probably plan or expect to retire a little bit earlier and maybe shock their portfolios from that perspective, just see what happens if I don't quite make it to 65. And what would the plan be? Maybe it is a part-time job that I want to take to hopefully get me over that hump.
Yeah. So definitely get ready for retirement before you expect. But speaking of retirement, you're a retirement researcher. I'm a retirement aficionado, I guess. Tell me, how do you envision your retirement, Nate?
Boy, it still feels a long way away. I think I'm probably one of the ones that thinks I'll probably work a little bit longer. You know, I think I'll probably make it to my late 60s before I exit the workforce. I love what I do for a living. I love this aspect of this part of the job. I love thinking about retirement. So I'll probably stick around a little bit longer, and I hope it's a healthy one. You know, that really came up. One of the benefits of being a retirement researcher sometimes is you get to see and read about people that have gone through it before. And there's a lot of learnings there, right? I'm hoping to go through retirement only once. And so you learn from people that have done it before. And what really popped up, we have a qualitative partner study this year, and health came up more than I can ever remember. Whether it be healthcare and access to Medicare, whether it be health insurance and the cost of it, whether it be my health or the health of my spouse, came up over and over and over again. So I think that's the other thing that when I think about retirement, I think a lot about. It's not just the financial side. It's how am I going to enjoy it the way all these survey respondents seem to each and every single year. And I think health has as big of an impact on it as anything. So hopefully I can take care of myself so I can enjoy those later years.
Yeah, it's good thinking. And that's interesting that you said that health came up more often in 2023 compared to prior years. My daughters are Girl Scouts. And so a couple of years ago, I bought a few boxes of Girl Scout cookies to have in the office. You show up in the office, here you go, get some free Girl Scout cookies. Everyone loved it in 2022. And so I bought even more. In 2023, no one wanted them. So I had all these leftover Girl Scout cookies because everyone got healthier in 2023. So if you're my client listening, there's zero Girl Scout cookies showing up in 2024. So no temptation and maybe a little disappointment if you come to the office. We got Skinny Pop popcorn.
Oh, there you
we're
go.
Just trying to go with the times, and that's good stuff.
Yep. That's right. You're following the trends. I love it.
Yeah, great. Awesome. Well, I've got one more question for you, Nate, before we get there. Tell us what's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, so you can reach out to me at Nathaniel, Nathaniel dot S dot Miles, Miles at allspringglobal.com.
All right, perfect. And then, of course, if you want more ideas on how to avoid big retirement mistakes, go ahead right now, click that subscribe button. We'll be ready to send you new episodes every week. Final question, Nate. Tell us something about yourself that few people know about. And remember, this podcast is rated clean.
Rated clean, that really limits it. No,
There you go.
let's see. Something that very few people know. I live in Charlotte now, and came to Charlotte through Boston. Before that, I grew up in the Toronto area. So I think people joke that I just keep moving further and further south to chase that that warm weather. But I think Charlotte's probably as far south as we'll make it.
Yeah, and of course, when you said you came from Boston, I didn't believe you because you don't have any Bostonian part to your language, but you've got the that's like the radio broadcaster voice is the Toronto. That's what they're always looking for is like Toronto, Cleveland, I think area.
All right, fascinating. Okay, well, I might have to talk to you about how to perfect that voice, Jeremy.
There you go. You're right on. Well, thanks for coming on, sharing all this great info about retirement and some good news. I think the retirees are onto something. They're happy they retired and they seem to be content. Even if their spending's lower. And that's probably a wise attitude for all of us.
Exactly. Words to learn from.
You got it. Well, thank you again, Nate. And thank you for listening to the Retirement Reveal podcast. We believe if you know more about your money, you will feel better about your money and you will make better money decisions.
This was another great episode of the Retirement Revealed podcast. Click on the subscribe button below to automatically get our latest episodes. If you liked our show and want even more, please give us a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We would love to hear from you. Please go to retirement-revealed.com to learn more and send us your questions and feedback. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Kyle Financial Partners, Thrivent, or its affiliates. The guests are not affiliated with or endorsed by Thrivent Advisor Network. Kyle Financial Partners does not provide legal, accounting, or tax advice. Consult your attorney or tax professional. Representatives have general knowledge of the Social Security tenets. For details on your situation, contact the Social Security Administration. Kyle Financial Partners is part of the Thrivent Advisor Network, a registered investment advisor. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have with your investment planning. Advisory persons of Thrivent provide advisory services under a doing business as name or may have their own legal business entities. However, advisory services are engaged exclusively through Thrivent Advisor Network, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Kyle Financial Partners and Thrivent Advisor Network, LLC, are not affiliated companies. Information in this message is for the intended recipients only. Please visit our website, www.kylefp.com, for important disclosures.